WND, RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty treat? I know that you are. And I know you know that means it's time once again for Code Delicious. I'm Dr. Mike. We're here on Code Delicious, brought to you by the folks at Real Salt. Hey, Food Nation, if you are as passionate about real ingredients, real flavors, great tastes and textures, you got to use real seasonings like Real Salt. This stuff comes from under the ground, an evaporated ancient ocean full of all the goodness of nutrients, great flavor, and none of the pollutants and things, sugars, pollutants, other unwanted stuff that you might find in some of those salts. So check that label. Make sure you're seasoning with Real Salt. And speaking of real, we've got a real great guest on our program today, Cynthia Graubart. She's my kind of person. She's all about food. She's been a food writer. She's a James Beard, a winning cookbook author. She's a speaker. And hey, you've seen her work on the television because she's worked behind the scenes producing cooking shows. She's written a number of award-winning books with Nathalie Dupree. She's written her own book, Cooking for Two, Slow Cooker Double Dinners for Two, and The One-Armed Cook. And I am delighted to have her on the program today to talk about one of the things I'm passionate about, her new book, Chicken, A Savor of the South Cookbook. Cynthia, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted.
So I've got to ask, I love your book. It's a great book. Everybody needs to go out, especially with holidays coming up, and get about like 10 copies of this because it's a gift of love that you can give this holiday season. But why chicken?
Well, the world loves chicken. Not only do we love it here on our dinner plates in the United States, but the entire world loves chicken. And it's the most consumed animal protein in the world. And certainly in the United States, it has surpassed beef as the thing that we make for dinner. So chicken is, you know, it's just a blank slate that you can do so much with. It readily takes on great flavors from spices and herbs, and it, if you cook it properly, it's tender and tasty and delicious.
Well, I love that. And I love this book. You know, my book just came out, Ancient Eats, which is obviously has to do with food and history. And one of the things I loved about your book is you give us a little background about the bird. So, you know, how did the chicken cross the continent? Where did chicken come from? And how long have people been raising or consuming chickens?
For eons, actually. The funny thing about chicken, even though it has wings, it certainly didn't fly to get from continent to continent. It was actually carried by explorers that traveled with the wild fowl. It's indigenous to India and Malaysia and China, and the actual chicken that we eat today is a descendant of chicken that was domesticated in Southeast Asia, and that was about 10,000 years ago. So we're talking about a long line of chicken appearing on people's dinner plates. It's really fascinating, the spread of chicken throughout the world. And you look at things like the Greeks, their vases and altars and all had images of chickens on them. So chickens go way back, way, way back.
Oh, yeah. And in ancient Greece, and folks can read about it in the chapter in my book, Ancient Eats. You can check that out on Amazon and get a couple of copies of that while you're getting Cynthia's book, Chicken, A Savor of the South Cookbook. It was actually kind of frowned upon because it came through Greece from Persia. And so it was originally thought, much like the Greeks kind of thumbed their nose at the Persians, that it was ostentatious. It was called the Persian Awakener for those reasons. But it was so delicious that gradually it got incorporated into the diet. And what they did was drop it, and it was just known as the Awakener. And a chicken was one of those dishes, one of those gifts that you could give for very important occasions like weddings and so forth. So we've been honoring the chicken, been involved with the chicken for a long time. But one of the things that you talk about in the book that really, you know, hit home for me and warmed the cockles of my heart was you talked about the importance of getting quality birds. And could you speak a little bit to that? Because, you know, one of the things that I think folks forget about when they're eating chicken today is, hey, you know, a quality chicken is one item, but, you know, a processed nugget chicken-like thing is completely another. And they're not the same in terms of taste, texture, and certainly not the same in terms of the nutrition and things that we derive from it.
Exactly, exactly. You know, if we want to put healthy food into our bodies, we have to support the people that are growing and making healthy food for us. And if you look at local and regional farmers that are raising poultry that is pasture-raised and understanding what kind of feed that that the chickens are eating and how the chicken is processed, it's almost always a more humane process, and it's always more nutritious. And so you might spend a dollar, maybe a dollar a pound more for a chicken that is organic and pasture-raised, but you're getting far more benefit nutritionally from that chicken than you would from a big commercially raised chicken. So, you know, you do want to be mindful of that when you're looking for chicken. In fact, one of the, you know, this is a nice sized book. It's not overwhelming. It's easy to thumb through the pages. And the introductory materials, this was just so wonderful that the publisher allows authors to take the time to explain things about the ingredient. And so I've got a lot of information about labeling, and labeling can be so confusing in the grocery store about, you know,
absolutely.
What does natural absolutely mean? You know, natural is a very confusing term. So, you know, you definitely want to be cautious of what you're of chicken that you're buying and getting the best that you can afford. There's a lot of nutrition available in chicken, and you want to get the most bang for your buck.
And all those points to what you just spoke about, hey, folks, the kind of bird you're describing simply tastes better. It actually has flavor. And when you taste a real chicken, you won't believe, you know, what you've been buying and consuming through, you know, the fast food places and so on and so forth. So, Cynthia, could you, you know, help our listeners a little bit and walk them through, you know, what do you do? What are you looking for? You go into the grocery store, you want to get that perfect bird, and maybe some things they should pay attention to the label, and maybe a couple of things that, hey, don't get faked out by this.
Well, it's easy to be faked out by a few things. One of the things that surprises people is the term free range. Free range appears on labels, but the term free range isn't defined as to whether or not all the chickens have access to the outdoors. It only requires that there be an opening to the outdoors so that a chicken could choose to go outside. But how big of a door is it? Can all the chickens go out? It's one of those terms that, you know, puts into our mind a very pastoral scene. But quite frankly, that's not the reality. So that's a term that can be a little bit misleading.
That's just good advertising, right?
It's great advertising. It's great advertising. You know, they use the color green on labels so that we assume that this is a more natural, better for us product. Same thing for farm raised. All chicken is farm raised. It's just, is it a big industrial farm or is it a small farm? So
yeah, it's not coming out of somebody's like closet in an apartment in New York City. At least we hope
not. We hope not. But here's one label I do want people to start looking for, and it's a relatively new term, but I'm seeing it more and more, and that is air chilled poultry. And air chilling the poultry is a process where they cool the meat down really fast, and typically it's done in large vats of water, and very cold water, of course. Unfortunately, that really allows for easy transmittal of salmonella. Well, now more modern plants are using air chilling so that the chickens travel through, the meat actually travels through on conveyors through super hyper-chilled chambers, and they're not dunked in water. And this is almost eliminating salmonella completely. It is a fabulous technology.
And one of the things, too, when you get the birds, you know, a naturally raised chicken, the way you described it, that we should seek out, when they're healthy like that, they're really not the stressed, overcrowded birds of these industrial raising, these CAFOs, the concentrated animal feeding operations. And when they're less stressed, they are much, 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 much less likely to develop or be susceptible to things like salmonella. Additionally, some studies have shown when they're allowed to eat their natural omnivorous, not chickens are not vegetarians, but like us, they like to eat and get the protein from the little bugs as they peck the ground. When they get that natural diet, as opposed to, again, to the industrial feed, particularly if it's a GMO type feed, that alters their bacteria and makes them have higher levels of what are human pathogens, things like salmonella. So really getting out and following your example about how to pick the chicken, you're going to get something tastier, you're going to get something that's better for you. And as you said, it may cost a little bit more, but what I've found is if folks can follow the directions in your book, buy these whole chickens, break the parts down, you're also going to get a carcass for stock, and it's going to cost as much as if you're buying the industrial bird in packages of breasts or thighs, you know, whatever.
Right.
And I loved, you know, one of your recipes there, I think, and I want you to walk us through this, how to do it is, you know, every chef, you know, should have to really make a good omelet because it's a lot harder than it seems, and they should have to roast a chicken. So you have a great recipe in there for roast chicken. So let's help everyone become a, you know, a gourmet chef. Can you just walk us through how you make that perfect roast chicken?
Okay, this is the roast chicken that epitomizes Sunday dinner. You know, that glistening, gorgeous, crispy skin.
Oh, yum, 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 yum.
Just that moist, tender, tasty bird. I mean, it's really something that is quite, quite special. And it's not that hard to do. And if you take a couple of little extra steps, you are really going to ensure great success. One is brining a chicken. If you brine a chicken in a salt water solution, you are tenderizing that bird. And it makes a huge difference. You can brine in salt water, or you can brine in buttermilk that has salt in it. And of course, you rinse and pat dry the chicken after it's brined, so that you're not worrying about the additional salt on the outside. You know, it just makes that meat so much more tender. Then when you put before you put the bird in the oven, if you slip your fingers underneath the skin of the breast between the meat and the skin and just pat a little bit of butter there, that butter is trapped underneath that skin and is going to help tenderize that breast meat, and it also will crisp the skin from underneath. So that's another little trick. And then the third trick is to start the chicken on its side in a roasting pan. Now, I use a little rack. And if you don't have a rack, just take a couple of pieces of aluminum foil and sort of crunch them together like a little log, and you can hold up your chicken inside of a roasting pan with a little bit of aluminum foil. So you start the bird on its side for about 15 minutes and then rotate it to the other side for about 15 minutes. And if you think about it, it's going to help get that skin nicely cooked and begin the browning process for that part kind of underneath, not all the way on the bottom, but sort of on that low side of a chicken. And that just gives you more great flavor and obviously a prettier bird as well. But those are some easy tricks to upping your game for your Sunday dinner chicken.
Oh, that's a great advice. And you know, once you get one of the birds you've just helped us pick out, so it's got this great flavor, and now you've shown us, you know, how to make it absolutely, you know, crispy skin, delicious, moist, tender meat. And folks, you definitely want to season that with real salt, because you want to use real seasonings, real salt and pepper. And you are listening to Code Delicious with Dr. Mike. I am talking with Cynthia Grobbert about her incredible new book, Chicken. Everybody loves chicken. We all love chicken. If you want to know everything chicken, including there's a number of great recipes in here, you definitely want to get this book, and you want to get about 10 copies or so you can give them away with the holiday seasons coming up, because this makes a really great gift for anyone that you know that loves food, loves to be in the kitchen. And when we're in the kitchen, we all love chicken. So one of the other things, Cynthia, that you hit on in the book, and you give a recipe for, and I'm going to warn folks, because once you do this, it's like riding first class. You can't go back behind the curtain. You actually help folks make their own chicken stock. And, you know, as a professional, culinary professional type, I know folks will do recipes and they'll come to me and say, you know, I did and I followed the instructions and I bought all this stuff, but man, it just wasn't as good as what I got in the recipe, or wasn't as good as, you know, what you cooked in the restaurant the other day. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that people buy junky cheap stocks. And once you use stock to, you know, make risotto, make gravies, etc., when you use that real stock, you're really getting flavor. So can you walk us through, you know, both the light chicken stock, which is like all utility in my kitchen, and then the dark chicken stock, and then when you would use one or the other? Because folks, you really want to pay attention to this. This is just, you know, a key staple, you know, for anybody who's serious in the kitchen, whether you're cooking a chicken or just, you know, making another type of meal where you need a stock.
Making your own chicken stock is so easy. And the great thing is you get so much better flavor from it than you do from a can or carton of stock. And it's so easy to do. What I like to do, and this is the lazy girl start for it, is just
save. Oh, that's great. That's perfect. That's perfect, because we all like to be a little lazy in the kitchen.
Exactly. You can just hang on to your chicken bones from an already cooked chicken. You can start with that to make it so easy. Now, if you want to start as a purist, then pick up some wings. I save the chickens that I buy have a chicken neck inside the cavity. So I take that out when I've defrosted the chicken, and I toss that chicken neck into a resealable plastic bag that I keep in the freezer. And when I've got four or five chicken necks, then I'm ready to start my next batch of stock. But if you don't happen to have chicken necks in your your freezer already, you could get a small package of chicken wings.
And that's what I do. I'll collect the wings when I break down the chickens. And, you know, if I'm doing something where, you know, I just want to cook some breasts, or I want to break off the legs and the thighs from a whole chicken, then when you buy them, as you described earlier, then you're left over with this carcass. And like you said, for the wings, I'll save, you know, two or three carcasses. And boy, that just makes a wonderful stock, and it makes it so much more economical. So when you're breaking down a chicken or something, folks, you know, don't throw away those bones.
Right.
What about the organs? I know folks shouldn't be using the livers in there. Do you ever put, sometimes you'll get the giblets in there. Do you put those in the stock, or do you save them as special treats?
I tend to save those as special treats, but
me too.
But they, you also, if you do use them in the stock, your stock isn't going to be as light or as clear. So it all depends on what your ultimate goal is with that. But making stock, you just need a large pot of water. You need some celery. You need some onion. You need some carrots. If you want, you can put a little thyme, fresh thyme. Some parsley stems, you know, not just the leaves, but the stem too. Don't chop it up so you can remove it easily at the end of the process. But the whole stem in there, some garlic cloves, some peppercorns, you bring that up to the boil, and then you turn it down to a simmer. And then the great thing is you just let it think about itself. It does its own thing. You don't have to do anything. And you let it sit for a couple of hours, just, you know, 2 or 3 hours, just simmering at very low simmer. And then you're going to strain out all of the solids, and you're left with this very lovely chicken broth. I freeze mine in 1 and 2 cup size containers in my freezer because I like to have them on hand, and I use them all numbers of ways. I use the chicken stock instead of water when I'm making rice. Just anything that needs an extra boost of flavor, if you can substitute chicken stock for it, you're going to really up the taste for that dish. So it's an easy thing to make. If you make a batch, it'll last for about 3 days in the freezer, in the refrigerator, but you really want to package it for the freezer because it's like having money in the bank to have that great tasting stock there.
Absolutely. And what you describe, there is absolutely no comparison between what you're talking about. And you hear people now talking about, you know, oh, the benefits of the bone broth, and it's sort of all the rage. And I know healthcare professionals who are, you know, trying to jump in saying, oh, you know, I'm going to write a book about, you know, bone broth and push bone broth and sell bone broth to people. You've been doing, and chefs have been making bone broth. Let's see, how long have we been cooking chicken? 10,000 years, right? That's essentially what we're doing. So the nutrition aspect of it, the flavor aspect of it, that's what we've got to get folks. These nutritional things, I mean, it's not outside of great food and great flavor. And let me pick your brain one more time, because sometimes we want things that are a little richer, a little darker in terms of the chicken stock. So how does one make, there's what you described, a nice light chicken stock. How would you go about making a dark chicken stock, and when would you use that?
Well, a darker chicken stock is something where you want just how you think it would be. It would be more flavorful, more intense flavor. And it's very easy. All you do is you roast the bones before you get started. And you can roast the vegetables along with it. So you can put the bones and wing pieces and the vegetables all on a sheet tray and on a cookie sheet, a rimmed baking sheet. So is actually best. You could drizzle a little olive oil on that and pop that in the oven and just roast it. And then when that is starting to caramelize, you're going to get deeper flavors there. And then you're going to just slide all of those things into a large pot with water and bring it up to the boil and simmer it just like you would before. And you've got just a more intensely flavored stock. And you can use it in much the same way. The lighter stock might come into play if for color purposes. Maybe you don't want it to add color to a dish. A darker stock, of course, is going to be a little muddier looking and richer and browner than a light stock, which may not matter in a recipe unless you want it to be light colored, then use the other.
Okay, in the time we've got back, I've just got to know, folks, again, we're talking with Cynthia Graubart. Her new book, Chicken, A Savor of the South Cookbook, absolutely a phenomenal reference. You got to have it in your kitchen. You'll enjoy the history, the story. You'll be a chicken expert. What's your go-to recipe? What's your favorite chicken recipe? After writing 50, you know, plus recipes for the book, which one get, you know, kind of wet your whistle?
Oh, don't make me choose. Don't make me choose.
Of course I got to make you choose.
I have to say that I am partial to chicken thighs. I think they have so much more flavor than a chicken breast, and they are they've got a little bit more protein and some important vitamins and minerals in the darker meat, and I think they have more flavor. So I'm a little partial. So what I've done in the book is I've written recipes for a whole chicken, for a whole cut-up chicken, for chicken thighs, chicken wings, drumsticks, even some things to do with already cooked chicken. But I would have to say the thigh recipes might eke out at the top of my list. My go-to is a honey mustard chicken thigh, and that you just marinate it in some honey and a couple of different kinds of mustard, a Dijon and a whole grain mustard. A nice twist to that is to add some curry powder. I've got international flavors in this book. I've got flavors of the American South with a great fried chicken. Just, you know, I've covered all the bases. And
you definitely have. It really is. You know, one of these things that is a, in my opinion, a kitchen essential, particularly because in the U.S. we eat and consume so much chicken. So Cynthia, where can folks get the book? Where can they find you?
Well, I'd love for them to connect with me through my website, CynthiaGraubart.com. I'm on all the social media platforms, and I love answering people's questions. I love seeing pictures of the recipes that they make and what they're doing with chicken. And the book is available at your local independent bookstore, chain bookstores, and, of course, online, and it's also available on my website.
And Cynthia, I'm going to ask your permission because, you know, our newsletter goes out. Go to cardiochef.com, get that. It's okay for us to share your stock recipe on our newsletter that goes out to all our fans.
Oh, please do. I want everybody to start making their own stock. It's so easy.
Me too. Cynthia, thank you so much for being with us today. And folks, until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.